Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture and to remind viewers that entertainment is not mindless.
Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 83. On this episode, we are talking about Pixar's second film of 2015, The Good Dinosaur. To help us have this conversation, we bring in Alexis Johnson and Griffin Kale, both of whom you probably recognize from Real World Theology, but they each have some of their own stuff going on, so make sure you follow them and check that out. Furthermore, make sure you go to realworldtheology.com and check out all the reviews, the contributors, the people there. We have tons of stuff going on, some Star Wars stuff right around the corner. Follow us at Real World Theo on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. Join our discussion group. It's been a real blast to have these conversations with you. Keep looking for new podcasts the 1st, 10th, and 20th of the month. And as always, rate and review the show if you like it. We love getting your feedback. And this particular is a really great conversation about a movie we did not care for all that much, but I think it just, again, goes to show that the movie does not have to be great for the conversation to be great. So here it is, episode 83, The Good Dinosaur and Bad Dads. One of the reasons that you're on, though you claim, Griffin, that you're never on,
I'm kidding. I'm kidding, fans. Fans of me.
Is that...
I'm joking. I know.
You're one of the biggest Pixar fans that I know.
Yeah.
Because you have every Pixar film?
Yep. I just got Ratatouille and replaced my... You remember whenever we watched Incredibles? My disc was like scratched up.
Oh, there's like a place?
Just replaced it.
Really?
Just replaced it. It's on sale right now everywhere. Because the second
one. Yeah.
I have every Pixar movie too.
Hey,
and for Cars 2 and Planes.
Hey,
Planes is not a Pixar movie.
Or Disney, yeah.
Yeah. That's a really interesting thing. Ever since Disney and Pixar kind of like
people just assume
if it looks like Pixar animation, people confuse it with all that stuff.
Well, but all the Pixar great movies are Disney Pixar.
Yeah. But just plain Disney movies.
Yeah, because wasn't Disney Pixar. Yeah. Yeah, there was nothing. Yeah, Pixar was hey, we don't really have the time nor the desire to make that movie, so we're gonna make The Good Dinosaur. We're gonna rewrite the script twice and see what comes out the other side. And you know,
That's the thing. So both of you guys obviously like Pixar a lot and or wasting money. And I'm going to give you both the benefit of the doubt and assume that it's because you just like Pixar a lot. Not just because you like to buy DVD or Blu-ray discs of things that you don't enjoy.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's a big of a stretch. So with that in mind, well, actually, before I even get into that, Alexis, what is your favorite Pixar movie?
The Incredibles.
The Incredibles?
Mm. I mean, I like them all, but that's my favorite.
That's not even a question.
Wall-E
every time.
Wall-E every time?
Yeah. Wally every time.
That's so crazy. I'd say The Incredibles probably too. I'm lying.
Toy Story 3.
It's Toy Story. I consider it one long movie that makes me happy.
Well, you have to pick one, though.
I can't pick one.
Nope. You have to pick one.
Okay, so it'd be like 3-2-1, maybe?
3-2-1?
1-2-3. It depends on what day of the week it is.
See, I'm 3-1-2.
Yeah. So people tend not to like 2.
I'm sorry. I just like intense.
Two. Yeah, no, Griffin. That's what Griffin brings.
I mean, not that I don't like it. I just don't like. It's not my favorite. Definitely not my favorite out of the three.
It's tough.
I can't really pick stuff like that because with Toy Story, each of the three films had a different thing to say, and I liked all the things in. Although 3, of course, was just the most emotionally intense. But
yeah.
Well, I think it's because the symbolism, while not beating you over the head, was more easily accessible in that one. Some of the parallels for 1 and 2, like if you sat down and had a conversation, like what we would do on this podcast, I think 1 and 2 are like, oh my gosh, that is what Toy Story 1 was about. Boom, that is what Toy Story 2 about. No one was confused about what Toy Story 3 was about.
Yeah.
And
actually, I think the remarkable thing about Toy Story 3, because we're just going to talk about the movies that I love, is the fact that Toy Story 3 was, it was obvious what it was about, and yet it wasn't bad or hammy or cheesy or any of that stuff. And if you say
like,
it is,
I feel like all this is going somewhere.
No. I was just curious because so this is establishing or setting the scene.
Yeah, we're setting the standard.
So why The Incredibles, Alexis?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I love, of course, the superhero stuff, but the style was incredible. Mm-hmm. The score, like with the Michael Giacchino's, like really, I don't know how you say his name, sorry, his really intense, jazzy, fun score. I think what I really liked about it was that it was very, I mean, most Pixar films are adult, but the themes were really adult. The conversations between the husband and wife were very adult, but yet it was still like you didn't feel like it wasn't a kid's movie, like, or something that everyone, it was for all ages and stuff. But I really liked the intense dynamic of the family and like coping with their differences against the world and all that kind of stuff. But mostly it's the style. I just really dig that old vintage superhero comic noir sort of thing. But I really also liked, yeah, what the family went through and that kind of understanding. I think it was the first time a movie really, I mean, especially a Pixar Disney movie, they always talk about families, but in like a modern day setting where people can relate to it even more, I think. So I don't know. That just makes sense.
I'm down with all that. So Griffin, Wally, why are you weeping man tears every time you watch Wally?
That's true. Gosh. I mean, I think obviously the first, I mean, the first 30 minutes, I think everybody would agree is like some of the best film.
How do you tell a story without saying anything?
Yeah. And that's actually like, and we'll get into, I know that you guys from conversation, and I'm not trying to spoil too much of the conversation, but I know that both of you are pretty down on The Good Dinosaur. That's one thing I like about, I'm excited about this conversation that we're going to get into, because I love that they tried to redo that, and I get that they didn't come across great at it, but they didn't say a lot, and they told a really great story. And really great story is a bit of a stretch. They told a story, and they didn't say a lot. And that's the thing I love about WALL-E is that first 30 minutes, it tells a huge story. Or maybe it's probably less than 30 minutes, I think, if we're, maybe, yeah.
No, I think it's, I mean, it's
probably,
half,
yeah, it's yeah. probably an hour and a half total movie. Yeah, so I think it just tells this amazing story of, it sets up this character so well so that whenever that character is introduced to anybody else, you are already totally on that character's side in a very short amount of time. And that character hasn't said or really... That character hasn't said anything to tell you that it's a good guy, but you're totally on that character's side. So I love that. And then going forward from there, I just love the whole idea that, that like this rusted, broken creature and this perfect white angelic creature are pulled onto this, like the imagery is huge because it's like they're pulled into space in order to save the world. Like they're basically brought up to save the world. And like the salvation of the world comes in the form of life in this little green plant. Like just, I mean, yeah, maybe smack me over the face with it, but I think that it's a little bit more subtle than that. I think like from watching it 30 billion times, I'm sure there are a lot of people who got it in this first time, but it's definitely one of my favorite movies all time, much less Pixar. And I love The Incredibles too. That movie is fantastic. The script, that whole scene with him and the lady who makes the costumes, oh my gosh, so funny.
Who is voiced by Brad Bird?
Yes,
we found out. Yes. Lord, I was looking up Tomorrowland stuff.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah. You didn't know that? Oh, yeah. That was one of my funny little tidbits.
That's so funny.
About WALL-E, though, one of the things that I really love about that film, I think it's hysterical. I mean, it is a little on the nose how it like pokes fun at our American life, but I just love that it shows us like the actual truth of what's going to happen to us. Like that is the truth.
Yes.
Like there's no getting around that. And I think that it got more and more obvious as time went by. I think it was about, when did that come out? 2007-ish. So yeah, like that or somewhere around there. But yeah, that I thought that was hysterical. And just, the American consumerism, obesity, all that. It was hysterical. So I thought that was good. But yeah, I mean, but I think it did it in a funny way, not like in a, we're all bad and we suck sort of.
Yeah.
Way.
And that was the thing was that, and I like, that's what I really loved about the film was that it didn't end with them still being fat and left on a ship. It ended with them standing up mm-hmm. and like mm-hmm. getting off the ship and like trying to be better.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I think that there are a lot of movies that poke fun at all those same things and then, or similar things and then don't,
there's no redemption.
There's no hope or redemption for the people. For the klutz mm-hmm. of the movie, it's like, they're just the dummies mm-hmm. and it'd be different if they were the bad guys, but they're not, they're, mm-hmm. they're just dummies. And, mm-hmm.
Dummies.
Yeah. But instead machines are bad, which, you know.
Well, I just always thought it was funny because as bad, quote, as it portrays like humanity's future mm-hmm. based on our consumerism and all kinds of laziness and, you know, desire to be more like the Roman Empire every day.
Yes.
With our creature comforts. I think it was still too optimistic because I think that even the concept of humanity banding together to be able to leave Earth at all is still too much cooperation.
Yeah, it feels like a whole lot of cooperation.
That, we'll rip each other apart well before then. This podcast has been brought to you by Optimism.
Yeah. Thank you for choosing Real World Theology. Yeah. This has been another episode of Optimism.
Okay, so let's take one step back from there. And so, Alexis, I would ask you, again, this is the frame, that both you guys have almost every Pixar movies. Why would you own every Pixar movie? Is it just like you buy every animated movie, or is there something that Pixar is doing specifically that you say, I need all of these?
Well, it goes back to, I'm a huge Disney fan, and I mean good Disney. So I have a big Disney collection. You know, I like a lot of the films, though, I'll be honest. And I liked all the Pixar films other than Cars 2. And everyone was hard on Cars, the first one. I loved it, though.
No, I thought it was great.
I thought it was great. It had a good message. It had, like, just fun characters and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. But, I mean, Cars 2 was just, like, complete lazy sellout sequel kind of stuff, mm-hmm. which was sad. But I would own them just because I think they're beautiful works of art and they're funny. And, like, they're the kind of movies I'd want to show my kids someday just because a lot of kids television and film is like kind of going down the tubes.
It's like Minions.
Yeah, but then that's sad because like we discussed before, Despicable mm-hmm. 1 and 2 were good, mm-hmm. but Minions, no, it just mm-hmm. didn't work out. But yeah, that I would own it just because that, and I'm a collector, so I do like to collect films and books, mm. so that's my reason.
Well, and that would also be why you would have a place here at the table.
Yeah. Welcome to the club. Yes. This has been another episode of Collectors Anonymous brought to you by Rural Theology.
That's right. Everything is, we're bringing lots of things. None of these are actually sponsors making us any money.
Yeah.
Dang it.
I know.
Dang
it. We got to find a way.
Yeah, we got to find it.
We got to find it.
Like, start paying you people.
Hey, Pixar, we're free advertising for you. Maybe you could give us a handout. Yeah.
At least, if you guys need help.
If you need help, yeah.
But like I said, I know there are ways to, there are roundabout ways and very vague and not very efficient ways to make money from doing blogs and or podcasts. But honestly, I think a big first step would be whatever we've got to do. I think it's mainly because where we are, at least Griffin and I here, in our local market, there's not a lot of people who are giving out like free passes,
nope.
you know, early screenings. Like there's no screenings typically happening in our area. We would have to drive like an hour or so away. Mm. So even that, hopes are dashed. But not to get too far off track, Griffin, I asked you the same question. What is it about Pixar? Because again, like I said, this is an assumption that you're not just buying like every animated movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about Pixar that makes you specifically collect Pixar.
There are very specific animated movies that I own. It's Pixar, it's Miyazaki, mm-hmm. and it is The Adventures of Tintin, the mm-hmm. recent one. And I think for all of those, it's because they don't really, well, not even really, they don't play down to children. They don't treat children as dummies mm-hmm. and they, you know, they give themes and ideas that, I've like seen kids turn around and ask questions about, mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh, that's awesome that you're thinking about this. And it's not just, you know, poo-poo humor or like, you know, it, and I think that that's what, whenever you talk about Alexis, like TV going down the drain for kids, I think about that, like just like the dumb humor. That doesn't lend itself to any sort of quality conversation. And that being said, also, I mean, obviously they're beautiful films. Mm-hmm. And if you were to go back, which you should, because it's an awesome movie, but and watch Toy Story 1 and then turn around and watch Good Dinosaur.
Holy
cow. Mm-hmm. The difference, I mean, Toy Story 1 looked like stop animation compared to what...
Heck, you could just watch Toy Story 1 and watch Toy Story 3 and see how far things have come.
And it's really impressive to me that that in so many ways, Pixar has led the way in
like,
that.
Like, they never said that we're okay just making stuff.
Yeah, because they were like, oh, we know we've got really good stories to tell, which they do. Whether you love, like, everyone they've ever done, like, for the most part, they have really good stories to tell. And so when I think about that, and then I, like, look at, they're not willing to say, like, that's enough. Like, we need more than that. And so that's where my love for them has come from and why I own everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, so for me, I don't own all the Pixar films. I have a number of them, but I typically don't.
You're not like mass collector. Yeah, you don't decide you like one director and buy everything.
Yeah, typically no. But I buy things that I know I'm going to watch a lot.
Exactly.
And I would like to have all the Pixar films. It's just a matter of order, and I've got some other things first. But that doesn't mean I don't love Pixar. Like, by Pixar putting their name on a film, I will go to the theater to see it.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't highly, like, I was like, how are they going to make Inside Out interesting? I don't know. I was going to go see it anyway. Same thing with The Good Dinosaur.
Bill Hader, that's how.
Well, I think we've talked about how most people like Bill Hader more than I do. But that's okay. I'm completely fine with that. He has an appeal to people, and good for him. this show brought to you by Bill Hader.
Thanks,
I'm a,
Bill.
I'm a Bill Hader. So
I'm a Bill Hader.
We got jokes. Oh, jokes wow. Brought to you by Real World Theology. So I love Pixar. I love the message. I love they have these themes of kind of everyone has something special to offer. Family, finding your place in that family. There's room for uniqueness and creativity. The things that make you who you are aren't what you do. The themes that I see in almost every Pixar movie, things that I would want my kids to see and have discussions with, like Griffin's talking about. And have my kids someday see them, like Alexis is talking about. So we have The Good Dinosaur, which just came out, which we all saw. Pixar movie. We were going to see it. We could have seen zero trailers. We were all going to see this movie.
Yeah, right? I didn't see a trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know what this movie was about before I walked in the theater. And I mean, other than Dinosaur.
But, oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, I've been trying that more and more. Like I still haven't seen the trailer for Hateful Eight besides like the teaser that came out forever ago where it just had the names.
Mm. Well, that's what I was gonna say. I don't know how you avoid them. I try to avoid them, but I can see so many movies. Like,
well, I just don't hang out on Facebook. That's why.
Oh no, it's not even that. It's
you're talking about the trailer. Oh yeah,
I go to the theater and I've seen the second Revenant trailer more times than I want. I just like I don't want to see anything else. I want this beautiful thing to be something that is, you know, same thing. I know I'm gonna see a Hateful Eight trailer, like a full trailer
when you go see Revenant or anything like that. Yeah. You're gonna see a trailer. Yeah.
But I've tried that too. But so like I said, we were gonna go see it no matter. We were gonna see The Good Dinosaur no matter what. It didn't matter. And Griffin, you already mentioned that this film, The Good Dinosaur, had a couple rewrites. Kind of a couple change of the person in charge.
It got pushed
charge.
Back a couple times.
Yeah, and it got pushed back a couple times. I went and looked at IMDb, and it looks like the concept and what is it, original development was credited to Bob Peterson, who is responsible for Up and Finding Nemo. You know, movies.
Solid.
I think movies that most people would agree were very, very solid to some people. I mean, like Up's their favorite Pixar movie.
Yeah.
So. Seemed like it was going in a good direction. Something happened. We have mixed up. Then we have Peter Sohn coming in, and he really had nothing to his credit. He had a couple things that he'd worked on, and so he's got some credits on the story. And then this screenplay was written by, I'm going to mess this up, Meg Lafave Beans. And she also was one of the people who helped write the Inside Out script.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a whole bunch of hands in this, and that never seems like a great idea, but it kind of worked for Inside Out. Inside Out had a lot of the same stories going on, started by someone, ended up given Pete Doctor had his hands in the claymation wonderland of Inside Out. But there's no Pete Doctor here. We only had Pete Soane. So we don't have really an established name giving us the final product of Good Dinosaur, and that was kind of like a little bit of a hesitant to me. But I said, you know what? Pixar's not going to put it out unless it's top-notch. And what happened was, this is possibly the first, I was reading an article that called it a flop that Pixar has ever produced. And when I say that, I don't mean like, you know, it's not making a decent amount of money, but by Pixar's standards, it's making almost no money. And depending on like the projections right now, it looks like it might not even break even, which will be the first Pixar movie to not only like make money, but like make a good amount of money. I think the closest thing is like A Bug's Life, and Bug's Life still made money.
Yeah. Bug's Life still broke even.
Yeah. And so this one has a possibility of not even breaking even.
Bug's Life is my second favorite. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. So, you know, that I don't think necessarily a box office is always indicative of how good a film is, because we've seen plenty of examples of this. Yeah, Wes
Anderson. Yeah, I knew what you were going to say. Say Wes Anderson. I was going to jump in front of that one, because
the first thing that came to mind. The problem is most of the examples I can think of aren't animated, because animated movies tend to always make a lot of money.
Yeah, they even do well. There's one animated movie in the theater at a time for the most part. Or maybe two, and you're going to go see the one that you have heard of the most.
Yeah. Or not, just because you want something to babysit your children that you don't have to talk to them about later, that they can, you know, aka just send them to see Minions. but we went over that last time we did an animated movie.
Yes.
So you know, that's this really weird phenomenon for an animated movie not to make any money. And like I said, so most of the things that I was going to mention that box office wasn't an indicator of weren't animated.
Yeah, well, I think
so,
we're talking about
thinking, like Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah.
Like, how could a movie this good basically not make any money?
Well, hold on. You mean Day After Tomorrow?
No, not Day After Tomorrow.
What was it originally called?
Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, see?
So Day After Tomorrow is like Dennis Quaid, right?
Day After Tomorrow is like one of the worst things.
It is one of the worst things.
That's like the one where like the world's ending.
And you know what?
Hurricanes, snowstorms.
I bet Day After Tomorrow made more money than Edge of Tomorrow.
No, I know it did.
Yeah, you know it did.
I feel like that movie like broke like 100 million in like a month or something like that.
If he took that long.
Yeah.
So comparatively, The Good Dinosaur is well below the box office appeal of previous Pixar films. So, Alexis, like, can you give any account for that?
Oh, why that might be?
Yeah, why is that the case?
Well, I think the trailers were very ambiguous because, well, in my opinion, the entire movie is ambiguous. But the trailers didn't really give a lot of the story. It was just kind of like, oh, look, here's this nice indie tune going over the scenes of the dinosaurs swirling around with fireflies. It wasn't really like, to me, the trailer didn't really suck me, and I was just like, oh, but it's Pixar. Yeah, I'm going to go see it either way. But I did think the animation was gorgeous, so I was like, I want to see it for that animation. But I think it just was too vague. There wasn't really a character, like an immediate lovable character to suck you in right away. It was just kind of like, oh, this is a thing. I don't know. That was my opinion. Like, just watching the trailers, it was just kind of not enough detail of story to really drag you in. It's like trailers either go one way or the other. They're either too much detail where they spoil everything, or they're not enough detail where you're like, I don't really know what to think of that. So that's just my opinion. But anyway, that's what I think.
Yeah, I'm gonna say, so you're saying your main idea is kind of like it didn't really hook anybody.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't give us enough to understand why we want to go see it. And I guess, which to me, it seems like as soon as they flash Pixar at the beginning of the trailer, that should be enough.
Yeah.
But apparently that's not the case. Not apparently. Because it was going up against, I guess, The Hunger Games. It was going up against the Peanuts movie, which is actually kind of weird, because I would say the Peanuts movie was for an older audience, or people forcing their kids to be like, love the things I loved when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Not that I don't love the Peanuts. And
well, but it's just not. It would be like a Looney Tunes movie coming out tomorrow.
You mean like when we finally get Space Jam 2?
That's not happening.
Oh, it's totally happening.
Yeah. I mean,
this movie was really good, though. I'm just throwing that out there.
But yeah, but I think, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So Griffin, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's this idea of, you would totally expect this movie to do really well because it's going up against a cartoon that kids don't really know anymore, mm-hmm. unless their parents still watch Charlie Brown Christmas every year. But the kid wouldn't choose to watch, like, they're going to be like, let's watch Polar Express.
they sound just like that.
Let's watch Polar Express, Pop. Pa.
I want to see animated Tom Hanks.
Are we on the Waltons now?
But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me that, that the trailers didn't tell a story at all. In your opinion, I didn't, like I said, I didn't see them, so I don't know. I imagine if they put that scene in the field, like, I would also only go, I would be like, yes, I'll go see that because it looks beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised. I think maybe it's possible that it's just not doing well because the reviews coming out of it are very mm-hmm. subpar. You know, if it's got 6 on IMDb or, like, you know, in the 50s on Rotten Tomatoes, that's not good for a Pixar movie. And, mm-hmm. and nowadays, sadly enough, I find more and more people, their immediate reaction is, do I want to go see this movie? Let me check and see what Rotten Tomatoes is mm-hmm. saying. And if it's below 50%, I'm not going.
Yeah.
And sure, yeah, you should probably, you know, listen to the masses about how
it can be helpful. It's like any other tool.
It can be helpful, but if you listen to the masses about, like, I would imagine that there have been tons of movies I know that there have been tons of movies that haven't done well in the box office and then later on sold like hotcakes.
Mm-hmm.
I mainly, whenever I think about that, I think of Shawshank Redemption so often because that movie did terribly in the box office, did not do well.
Fight Club.
Yeah, Fight Club did not do mm-hmm. well. These movies are...
obviously different audience than we're...
yeah, clearly. But we're talking about movies that now are considered in the top 100, like, on every list mm-hmm. probably ever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't think anyone's disagreeing that those movies, both of those movies, deserve to be in the top 100, like, of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least in the top, like, you know, top movies. So that in and of itself makes me just surprised that people have, like, we've all kind of lent ourselves to that. I don't know that that's the reason, but I know that for me, if I only went to go see Good Dinosaur based off of whether or not people liked it, all of my friends who had seen it right before I did, because I saw it on Saturday and a lot of people saw it on Friday, jeez, they all told me it's not that good. And I'm like, well, shut up. I don't want to know. I really just want to go see it kind of without having to hear about.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I think you're hitting on something that's pretty important. There is the caveat, and I've kind of already, you know, danced around. Well, I didn't dance around. I've just flat out said it, that I feel like a lot of parents, we talked about this, if anyone wants to hear this actual discussion, we talked about this for a long time, me, Josh, and Alexis, on Minions, about what parents do to babysit their children. Or just, you know, the kid's like, it's yellow, I want to go see Minions. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
There's no discernment. There's no like conversation afterwards, etc.
Yes.
So I'm not discounting the fact that there's probably some of that going on with any animated movie. You know, people are still going to see Hotel Transylvania 2. For whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
that's fine. You know, but animated movies come out. We've already pointed out there's one in the theater, typically about one in the theater at a time.
Yeah, and so there's always something, like, a little bit of overlap.
Yeah, yeah, and so there is some of that. Just okay, I'll take them, whatever the animated movie is. I actually had this epiphany while I was standing in line for Creed recently. There was a really long line, and the theater I go to, there's never a long line. All right. And I'm like, goodness gracious, how are this many people here? There's like literally 5 theaters in our very small city. And I'm listening to the conversations around me. And people are actually having a conversation, again, that I never thought was a thing. Because everything, you know, we're typically going to see movies very specifically, mm-hmm. very specific times, because we have an agenda to a certain degree. You know, we're doing it for the podcast. We're doing it because we enjoy film. People having these conversations were like, I don't know, what do you want to see? I don't know what starts sometime like in the next half hour. And I can see like that face. That's the face I was making.
You can't see my face, but imagine if like a fly flew and like hit you in right between the eyes. You're just like, what? Oh, what?
How is this even possible?
No, I can't imagine because I've worked in movie theaters for many years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thankfully not anymore, thank God. But Yeah, I can imagine. I've never understood that people not knowing what they're going to see. That's the first annoying thing. Or people just going to see a movie just because so-and-so, their favorite actor, is in it, but they don't know anything about it. And then they get mad.
Let's hold on there, okay? Because I will go see anything Benedict Cumberbatch is in.
Yep. Daniel Day-Lewis.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, but you can't blame anyone else if you don't like the movie, though, because if you're only going for him, that's then, true. You know what I mean? A lot of people would come out and be like, that was the worst show I've ever seen. And like,
just I can't believe Channing Tatum let us down again.
Anyway, I just wanted to point that out. I could imagine how you feel, because it annoys me and it has annoyed me for years that people take films so lightly. But anyway, go on.
Well, yeah, so we have that element, that whole little tangent we just went on. That element is a possibility. But I think especially with animated films, it's my shtick, my soapbox that I get onto when I go and talk to coworkers or something, and they're like, oh, that's that cartoon that's in the theater, really? I was like, it is an animated film. It is for all ages. There are movies for kids. There are cartoons for kids, and they're terrible. That's why I don't go see them. But most of them are animated films. Pixar, I argue very heartily for the fact that Pixar makes animated films for all ages. You can enjoy it if you're adult. You can really enjoy it if you're a kid, et cetera, et cetera. And so I would say that this is an animated film, and you have to deal with that word of mouth. Part of it's Rotten Tomatoes. Part of it's like, was it any good? So Griffin, would, like, when you got done seeing The Good Dinosaur, would you have come out and, like, you know, your friend with kids was like, oh, Griffin, you're really smart with the movies. Me and my wife can only get out so often with the children's.
Well, Austin Myers, now that you ask.
Can we go see The Good Dinosaur? Would you recommend it there, Mr. Kale?
Would I recommend The Good Dinosaur to a family? No.
No.
Why not? That is, so
well, hold on. I want you to answer why not. Okay. But I don't want you to get too far into it real quick.
Okay.
So I'm directing this a little bit. Alexis, same question, same terrible voice that I asked it in.
No, I really wouldn't. Okay. Ultimately.
All right. So go, Griffin. Why would you not recommend this to a family?
Okay. So I want to preface this with saying, not because I disagree or agree with any of the symbolism, but I do not, I think that an all ages animated film, and obviously, this is my opinion from somebody who doesn't work for Pixar and doesn't get to decide what they do with their lives. I don't want my Pixar movies to be smacking me in the face with symbolism and with ideas and with opinions that they have. Though I'm totally fine that they have opinions and I want them to express them whatever way they feel, I did not go to the movie to see that. And I, you know,
unlike Wall-E, which is very subtle with its symbolism.
Well, it's
I just want to say what we're all thinking, Griffin.
Yeah, no, I mean,
done in a much more beautiful and very wonderfully story told way. But
I get, yeah, and I think maybe that's part of it too. Is that part of it is that I'm like, enough kids have problems without, like, with dad not being around. why go show him a movie where dad's not around even more?
Or dad could have been around.
Dad could have been around. But
it's like the Disney thing, right? Like, the parents are always gone, or at least one parent is always gone.
Yeah, and
they were like, we started with two parents. Way to go, Pixar.
And like, now one left. Dad left.
Yeah, dad left.
Oh, that just reminds me of Trevor Noah's opening dialogue from he taking over the Daily Show. Gosh.
No clue.
Oh, well, John Stewart leaves. Mm-hmm. Trevor Noah takes over. He's like, you know, for a lot of you guys, like, John Stewart was like a father to you. And the truth is that dad left and there's a black guy in his place. and it was just, Trevor is just so funny. He's so on the nose. You can cut that out later if you want to.
I'm glad someone thinks so.
I think that guy's hilarious. So anyways, that being said, that was like just another thing where Pixar has this hard, I feel like they constantly show this thing where it's like, there's only one parent or one parent's never around. I don't know that you ever see dad in Toy Story, right? Is dad around?
Oh, no, dad's not around.
Dad's not around at all.
Of course he's not. What would he be?
Yeah, and that's where I'm, for me, I'm like, dad's this great encouragement in the beginning of the film. He's like, you'll make your mark, like you'll get there. And obviously there's like all this stuff about like, well, why do you have to prove yourself in the first place, father?
Dad.
But at the same time, counseling. I think there's just a lot of stuff there where it encourages, like for me, I'm like, don't encourage kids that they have to like be some specific thing or do some specific thing to get your approval.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to show my kids or anyone's kids a movie that tells them that.
Yeah.
Like, not just because I'm a Christian, but because I just don't think that that's true. Like, I don't think that that's necessary. Mm-hmm. And so a movie that tells the story of, like, you need to go out on an adventure and make a friend and then lead that friend back to their family and then somehow achieve your way back to your family, and that's when you'll make your mark, son.
Yeah, apparently, because they never really talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. What was that discussion like? Like, what exactly... Oh, God. Okay, so, again, as always, if you've never listened to the show before, we were going to spoil the entire movie.
Yeah.
All right, boom, done, go.
So, like, what...
What exactly did he do on his journey?
Yeah, Alexis, tell me what you think... What do you think happened on the journey that transported him from not being able to put his paw print on the granary to being able to put his paw print on the granary, or what?
The silo.
To be correct, the silo.
Well, yeah, this is another one of those. There's so many problems I have with this movie. Anyway, there's one of the things they're kind of going to is his little, you know, the little dog boy who is actually kind of cute, but anyway, he saved can't tell him.
Me hey, he has a name, him. Spot.
Yeah.
Things right. Spot. Yeah, that didn't really stick with me either. So anyway.
Yeah.
He saved him off that log in the end from the pterodactyls, which are a whole other ball of wax that I'll get into later. Mm-hmm. But that would be probably the thing he did is, like, I guess sacrificing himself to try to save his friend. But I don't know. It just was so that, like I said, this whole movie is very just.
Yeah. Gentle.
You can't really get a specific anything out of it.
Yeah, because I'm like, mom doesn't see him save the kid. And all he can do is just come home and be like, hey, I might have ran away for 3 days, or I might have just saved a child.
Yeah. Well, and even that, we're thinking he saved a child, and we're giving importance to that. That's like the equivalent of, like, your child running away from home.
Uh-huh.
And they come home and tell you a story because, like I said, we're just going to do the reverse.
Yeah.
Because the really creative thing they did, sarcasm in my voice.
Yes. We all hear it.
So they flipped this. They flipped the script. So to me, this is the equivalent of like maybe a teenager, if he's that old, runs away from home or gets separated from home for some reason that the mother does not know, and when he's gone. He comes back with a tale. You know, the mother's like, oh, I'm glad you're home. I don't care where you're going. Just, you know, child, that's great. And we overlook the fact that she probably would have been like, I'm glad you're home because now I'm going to kill you. So we overlook that. So he goes, it's okay. I learned to overcome my fear, mother. And she's like, oh, tell me how, Arlo. Tell me how. And he says, well, I found a stray dog. And I... ate some weird berries, and he saved me from a snake, and I punched a bird, and then I found the rest of his doggy family. And she's like, why do I care about this dog? And then he's grounded, and he goes to bed without supper.
Yep.
Like, instead, it's somehow like that idea is like, yes, yes, you've made your mark, you know?
It totally wasn't poignant at all. It was just like, oh, like, yeah, it was so flat.
And it's like there's so much cynicism built up in me from having to, like, sit through this film. And that's what I hate. So, like, you know, it's like, I didn't even really start out with a question, like, do we like this film? Alexis, I know conversations we've had, you didn't care for it too much. I am admitting that this is the worst Pixar movie I've ever seen by a lot. Mm-hmm. Personally, like I could watch Cars 2 again. Cars 2 was replete with all kinds of things that I think are dumb and kind of pandering, but at least it was mildly entertaining at times. Griffin, the good dinosaur. Where is it?
Oh, and like the top
and,
list?
In the pecking order.
Oh, I mean, it's maybe above Cars 2 by a hair.
By a hair?
By a hair.
Mm. And that mainly, hair's the animation.
Right? And we're assuming that hair's the animation. And
we're assuming in this
there's list, nothing below Cars 2.
There's nothing below Cars 2. Okay,
jeez.
Okay.
What, are you kidding me?
So, but you still wouldn't recommend it because even the worst Pixar movie is typically better than most other animated movies.
Yeah.
So we say that, but you're still not recommending it to people. I'm guessing I wouldn't recommend it to people. I don't want my kids. Well, I don't have kids, but I wouldn't want my kids to watch this.
Yeah.
But for most of the reasons you said, because there's this picture of this father who is basically not accepting his son. I love that, and we'll link it in the show notes, but the review over at Real Gospel, I thought, kind of summed up what I thought, because he said that he left The Good Dinosaur kind of feeling sad at the message it pushes. And I've talked to people, and some people didn't get this message, and they got more of an overcoming fear kind of message.
Yeah, I did not. But I mean, I got that.
Yeah, I mean, I did,
but that wasn't how I felt.
No, and so he goes on to say, Arlo is driven by fear his whole life, which I think was obvious, but yet rather than comforting him, and this is what you were alluding to earlier, Griffin, his father makes life more difficult for him, imploring Arlo to do a great work, making his mark, to win his approval. And then he makes a very apt comparison, and he says it's similar to The Lion King, yet Arlo's father is much colder than Mufasa.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there watching this film, and I'm like, I mean, it's one thing to kill the dad in a very kind of obviously coming,
like saving Arlo so that Arlo can become dad.
Yeah, but his dad was such a jerk.
Yeah.
I was like, he's like pushing him and yelling at him. I'm like, wow, I just don't want my kids to be like, I don't want them to hope I'd ever yell at them like that. Because it wasn't like, watch out, like yelling. It was always like, you know, come on,
Arlo, what are you doing?
Yeah. And I'm just like, wow. I don't know. That, like I said, it just, as soon as that happened, I turned and I looked at Laura, and I just had these eyes like, what am I watching?
Yeah.
Like, is someone playing a joke on me? Is this a Pixar film? Didn't we just watch, like, Toy Story, where we learned that people are accepted because of who they belong to, or their lineage, just because they are who they are.
Yeah, and even something like Inside Out that paints this picture of, like, there's this dichotomy of hope and sadness, and, mm-hmm. like, with the parents just like accepting that the child's like going through a lot, and I'm just like, oh, that's so beautiful. I get done watching that movie and I'm like, I feel so hopeful about the world. And
even when the dad messes up,
yeah,
like, you know, he wants to do good.
Yeah, he's like, he's trying to make it right as best he can. Mm-hmm. And so that's something where with this, I had no reason to root. The only reason I had to root for Arlo as a character was because his dad was a jerk. Yeah,
so he would stop getting abused.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, that's why I want you to succeed, so you can make your mark, and then mm-hmm. maybe you'll feel better because of that. And he does feel better at the end of the movie. But
So I'm watching it, and what I want is for Arlo to love his dad so much that love drives him to overcome fear.
Mm-hmm.
And because his dad, you know, cares about him and comforts him and encourages him. And we get like bits of kind of half-hearted encouragement, you know, when he's telling him to bludgeon, you know, something to death with a stick. There's that.
Thanks, Dad.
It's basically like, you need to learn how to be a man. So here's a gun. Let's go kill a deer.
Yeah.
You know, like, his dad has a very small view of what it is to be, like, a grown-up or a man dinosaur, whatever you want to say.
A manosaur.
He's a Manosaurus Rex.
Mm.
So, you know, it's this weird, weird, weird relationship that I can't fathom at all. And Alexis, you haven't really spoken to this yet, and I want to give you kind of, like, a second to kind of throw your two cents in.
Yeah, well, this goes back. I don't really mind that a lot of Disney Pixar films have a missing parent, because there are a lot of kids who can relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mind I really think the characters should have flaws. Like, the dad could have been that way if there was more of a, I guess, more of a redeeming thing or mm-hmm. more of a journey, a character arc for him. But he didn't really have a character arc. He just died. So when I think about, I guess I'm thinking back to The Little Mermaid as an example, you know, what her father does to her and how, you know, as far as like destroying all of her stuff and like mm-hmm. breaking her heart and all this stuff, but he feels remorse. And like the whole movie, it's all about how can I get my child back? You know, mm-hmm. how can I undo what I've done? Mm-hmm. And it's so like, it's a powerful movie. And I don't know if you knew this, but I watched the behind the scenes of that film. And there were parents who actually, like fathers, who said this film inspired them to reconcile with their estranged teenage daughters or, you know, the girls that they were having problems with mm-hmm. and that it brought them to tears and it made them like repair their relationship with their daughter just by watching The Little Mermaid. And I thought that was just amazing. And this movie is not a movie where you'd feel that way. But even Lion King, too, like the harshness Mufasa has is only because he's a king and he has to teach his son to be a certain level of leader. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit different than what's going on with Arlo and his dad. But yeah, I didn't feel like it was the worst thing ever, but I didn't really like his entire family, to be honest. Like, I thought his siblings were stupid and like, I just was like, they're jerks.
Yeah.
And like, his mom is just kind of like a nothing character. So there's that. And then his dad, same thing. And I'm like, when I think about what they could have done with the past parent child like conflicts and tensions and other films through Disney or Pixar or whatever, it could have been a lot deeper and a lot less creepy. I did think the whole like go bludgeon this animal thing is kind of but then again it's like flipping it, you know, like as if it were human they'd have to do it. Yeah, so I understand, but it's just it is a little bit unsettling, I guess, overall. And there wasn't really a redeeming factor for the dad's character. He's just dead and you're like, well, whatever, Arlo's alone now.
I think you make a good point with the mom, too, because where are the strong female dinosaur role models mm-hmm. for all the young lady dinosaurs to look up to?
Yeah.
There are none in this movie.
Mm-mm.
And the other thing is, what we're supposed to believe later in the film is that Arlo's able to overcome his fear because of this connection he has with his dad, but we never see that connection. If anything, I would argue that while some people say that it's love, his love for his father, and he mourns his father, he loves his father, allows him to overcome his fears, I would say it's guilt. Like, he feels like his dad's dead because of him. And so, guilt drives him to do these radical things that eventually allow him to push through his fears. But I was like, this is... Anyway, I just did not see it at all, and... Well, but, it didn't unfold that way.
I was just trying to look up and trying to remember the guy's name. So I would put to you that a more lovable dad in this movie is Butch.
The tough, hard, but
like when here's, I understand that the idea is that Butch comes and meets Arlo at a different point in his life. Mm-hmm. Arlo has like overcome some fear at this mm-hmm. point and kind of dealt with some of this stuff. And has a friend mm-hmm. who's like affirming and loving and like, mm-hmm. you know, there. But it's also something, it's so funny to me that, it puts in place instead this other character, which I get. And so here's where I understand if we're looking at this from a perspective of, hey, kid, you don't have a dad, like to the viewer, hey kid, you don't have a dad, so find yourself like another guy.
Find Sam Elliott. Sam Elliott
will be your father. and you know, and that seems just all the really encouraging is such a, I love the way that he just like encourages and just like, yeah, great job, you know.
Well, and they awesome. Accept him right away.
Yeah, like immediately he's like, hey, you're gonna be good. I go do this thing. You've got mm-hmm. this. Like, go jump on that. Go up there, yell some things, and like, you're gonna be great. We're gonna take care of you. And it's just this. It's just interesting picture. And so it does kind of just rub me wrong, I guess. That's the story. And so, that symbolism bothered me. There's just like a lot about this movie that just pressed me.
Yeah.
In a way that was just like, it wasn't that I disagreed or agreed, it's just that it was too much.
Yeah. So let me say this too about, because I would agree with you. I thought Butch was a much better father.
Yeah.
Even in his kind of like I'm not really here to be your dad. I'm just kind of here not to make you go crazy anymore.
Yeah, I'm going
to
keep you from dying.
Yeah, keep you from dying. And sometimes that's enough for a little while.
That is all you need dad to be.
Because even his actions, I think, are great. His advice, I think, is kind of terrible, at least from our perspective. I would say that what he says is something that I would consider very worldly wisdom. And I don't mind pushback on this because I'm still kind of processing it myself. But he gives this kind of, he tells a story and then he says something like, if you ain't scared, you ain't alive. Except he says it in a Sam Elliott voice, which I can't do because Sam Elliott's voice is like,
if you ain't scared, you ain't alive.
That's close enough.
That's kind of close.
That's way better than I can do. So I applaud that. And I'm just like, I think that's actually the opposite of what we're told. I feel like, we're accepted and we have nothing to fear. And living is actually living free from fear. I think when we talk about you ain't scared, you ain't alive, that's basically describing like our country right now. That's a whole bunch of people living in fear. I guess they know they're alive, but I would say it doesn't feel like life.
Yeah.
Being scared all the time.
It feels,
I would say it feels like death. It
feels very like
constricting.
Constricting,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But I would push back against the advice he gives.
I think it was badly said though. I don't think that's what he meant, like the way that you're receiving it. I think. But I think it was just badly put.
Tell me what he meant then. Why are you making me seem dumb on my puck?
push back. All right. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not going to be like, oh my gosh, how could you say that? But it's just like, when he's saying, if you ain't scared, you ain't alive, I think it's more just like letting him know that it is okay to afraid in the sense like you don't, everyone is going to be no matter what, even if like we know we don't have to be because, we're frail and all that kind of stuff. So it's more just like, it's just letting him know, like,
it's part of life.
That is normal. That is part of life. But I don't think he was saying like, feel alive by being scared. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like really. I think maybe they could have. I think the problem was it wasn't the advice he was giving him. It was how the rest of the movie played that out, or how the rest of the movie like kind of padded that.
That
mindset, because it's just like that. He needs to be like, his dad didn't really even let him. Like, he didn't really say, like, hey, it's okay if you're afraid. We'll keep working on this. Like, because Arlo needs to admit to himself that I am afraid and I have a problem and I need to work on it, so I think that was more what they were trying to get with the Sam Elliott. But they didn't. Yeah, it wasn't really fleshed out. So I totally don't think you were wrong to think that way. I'm just saying, I think he meant something different.
Okay, so that's good. I'm completely okay with that.
You're by far the first person who's ever disagreed with Mike on this show.
Yeah. But it's the first time it's happened. I'm very actually flustered about it.
Yeah.
But I wanted to not necessarily switch gears, but I want to tackle another side character, because another sad part about this movie to me is that the side characters, even though I wasn't really into them, were infinitely more interesting than our main character. And the main character's
that,
dad.
That rhino. Gosh, that killed me so much.
Wait, the Triceratops?
Was that what it was?
Yeah.
Like, whatever, the thing that's, like, got the little, like, birds, and he's like, whoever's first to name it gets it.
Well, I'm glad you liked that.
I thought it was so funny.
I'm glad that someone did, because I saw that in the preview.
So
and
much
I,
like, sorry, you guys are funny. Anyway,
we're at odds. It's okay. It's what we do.
Yeah, this is literally constantly our story.
This is how we make the Real World Theology podcast more like Sports Center. I'm just going to argue something.
Well, Griffin's, you mean First Steak.
Specifically.
You're Steven, by the way.
Am I?
Yeah.
Why do you get to be the black guy? No, wait, I'm Steven.
Yeah.
Yes! I get to be the cool one. You get to be the lame old white man.
Yeah.
Lame old white man.
I'm crotchety. What can I say?
Gosh, you are crotchety.
Yeah.
So speaking of crotchety, there are these, I'm guessing,
pterodactyls.
Are they pterodactyls?
Yes, they're pterodactyls.
Pterodactyls have teeth. I don't know.
They're pterodactyls.
Okay, so these are pterodactyls, and I'm under the impression that Alexis has opinions about pterodactyls.
I'm under the impression that Alexis is about to throw all of her opinions about pterodactyls at us. So, first off, could they even fly?
There were no good in Jurassic Park, and they were no good here.
Yeah.
No, they were good in Jurassic Park because they were all pretty with the music, and you felt great.
Yeah,
anyway.
It's true. They were flying
just
across
kidding.
The time.
That takes me back.
Then they killed people. Anyway.
Please insert Jurassic Park music right now. No. That was the part. There was a lot in the movie that left me with a bad taste in my mouth, and I'm sure you guys would agree. The whole, like, getting high off of eating bad fruit, that was weird. I was like, totally suitable. Okay, how does that even happen?
Yeah, like, one, how does that even, story-wise, that was the poop joke of this movie.
Yeah.
Derail.
Yeah, but it was just, it was like, where was that from?
You want to do something funny with animation?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Like, one of the things
across the universe.
I should mention, too, is that I went to a screening of this when the film actually wasn't yet complete. It was in September, which is pretty sad considering it was a November release. But there was just, like, there was only a few moments of the film that were unfinished animation, not many. So I went with my cousin, and she and I both felt really weirded out by, and we're both Christians, so I don't know if it's just because we felt alienated or whatever. But the pterodactyl characters were like, I mean, it wasn't even subtle. They were like really supposed to be like religious zealots. And it was like mocking religious people or people of faith or however you want to word it. It was like clearly mocking them. I couldn't believe it was so overt. And so we just kind of looked at each other halfway through their scene where they're talking about how the storm provides. So they come to Arlo as like a friend and they seem friendly, you know, and then they're all like, you know, trying to help him or from the sound of it. But then they turn on them and they want to eat Spot or, you know, they want to kill them, eat them, whatever. And they say that the storm provides. So whenever there's a storm, they pick off the flesh of whatever's left over. And that's their storm is like their version of God. And it was just kind of like really, it was unsettling how it was like, yeah, look, these religious people seem nice, but then when you get to know them, they're just out to get you. And it was like kind of, and then it came back a couple of times later in the film too, but mm-hmm. I don't know, did you guys feel that way or am I just totally nuts? But I was just like, I don't know if I like this. And it's not because I'm like, how dare you? I'm a Christian. I'm so offended. It was just like not even trying to hide it though. It was really like, the storm provides her, you know, and it was just like ridiculous. So yeah, they were trying to throw in a lot of terminology that people of faith would use.
Because of their tone, I did see how, or it did cross my mind that this, mm-hmm. this could be like the religious zealot of the film because Thunderclap gets down and he tells the story, which I think actually his story is more indicting of religion than their actual actions.
Yeah.
The story is like, think life was in a bad way. I was at my lowest place. And then I learned to worship something greater than myself.
Yeah.
And now I say that thing provides for me. I don't think it was intended to be poking necessarily at Christianity or any particular religion, at least from where I sat, I guess. What I did see was how, especially with the whole concept, the whole theme of fear, it is a very good description of what happens when someone gets in a very low place. When someone gets in a very low place, they can either embrace that kind of sadness and that fear, and they can become something ugly.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate that they used what I would say illusory. I love when I can't pronounce things. It's okay. So funny. Illusory. Right?
Yeah.
What is it?
Illusory.
Imagery.
Yeah, that's exactly the word.
To religious things, but to me, it actually is a warning that basically we become what we fear when we let it rule our lives. And I would say the Christian story, especially, and to a certain degree, a number of religious stories, their theology is like when you get to your lowest point, you need something greater than yourself to kind of pick you up. Not to encourage you to wallow around in it. And it could be taken as a criticism. I don't think it was specifically mocking Christianity. I think it was mocking people who like I said, this is what we see in culture again. This is me going back to the fear metaphor of what we see in culture right now. When when things get really terrible and people are scared, you either have to say, I believe in something greater, and that greater thing leads me to a like a higher road, or like the road apparently in culture that's less traveled right now, that says do good to others despite what's happening to you, and let that kind of, it sounds too humanist when I describe it this way, but basically let that make you a better person. Let that change you. Let that change your perspective. In Christianity, we would say, you know, you kind of look to God, and God kind of gives you a purpose. He answers lots of those questions about why and stuff like that, or at least helps you, comfort you through those, knowing that there's something bigger than yourself out there. Whereas other people who wallow in their fear, who allow fear to consume them, get so low that they would inflict harm upon others, harm upon tons of others, and let that be the way that they can survive, knowing that they're not the bottom of the food chain anymore. And again, there are religious aspects to it, but I didn't see it as direct. I saw it as more of fear. And I think that's one of the dangers of religion. And I think people who are not religious see religion as, especially the more radicalized religions, or the more, you know, the fundamentalist parts of religion, as the things that fear can make you become. That's my bridging the gap.
You're saying that you felt like it was more of an indictment on radical religion and religious belief rather than like
honest or genuine
religious belief. It's radical religious belief where we buy into fear and still claim love, like to believe in the, and to believe this thing that's like loving and care, like, because the storm does provide.
I don't like the way you're talking right now, Griffin.
I know, right? And now I'm about to eat off you. But like, you know, think about this. I was thinking about it in this context as you were talking, Alexis and you, Mikey. Like the storm did still provide things. Like it still provided food in the sense of water. It brought rain and things like that. Like it was still providing things to everyone. But it can also, like, that can be used to portray evil and to press evil upon others. And so, once again, my problem with it isn't so much like my disagreement or agreement with it. It's so much that it was just so not shrouded in anything. And that, I think that maybe is more of an indictment on the writing, and possibly just an indictment on the fact that there were so many different people with hands in this, and, you know, with, you know, spoons in there trying to make this one big pot of stew. They're like, it got a little bit just, okay, that's fine, whatever. I don't care. You don't know. We don't have time to figure out metaphors. Like, let's just go. So I wonder, yeah. So I think that's how where I felt about it. Cause I think Alexis sent that email and you'd said something about it and you're like, don't read this before you haven't seen it. And I read it anyways, cause I'm a sucker.
Does not follow directions at all.
Well, I watched it like that afternoon. You sent it that morning, and I think I watched it that afternoon, and I was like, yeah, I can totally see that. I can totally see like being offended by that. I was like, I was actually kind of hoping I was going to go in and it was going to be like making fun of the people that I make fun of and be like, yeah, awesome. But it was just making fun of the people that I feel bad for. It was making fun of the people that I feel like legitimately sorrow over and mourn for, like, man, how do you hear this message of love and justice and only get justice out of it? Like, how do you hear this message of, like, God's faithfulness and his provision for us and get out of it that our response should be anger and hate? Like, how do you, as people, hear this message of grace and peace and instead turn away from all those things?
How do you ask God, or how does God ask you, Griffin, do I not provide everything? And you say, yes.
but I still need...
I still need all this other stuff.
I need protection, though, God. Like, thanks for providing everything, but I still need a sword. Like, I need to grab a sword and mm-hmm. go... Like, I need to be sure I can protect myself. And obviously, like, within the context of everything that's going on right now, gosh, this movie feels much more weighty than it actually probably was.
Should.
Yeah. Like, maybe the timing of this movie was, like, spot on, and maybe more people, like, I don't know, maybe like, given that it was a little bit better written, that it would have felt more apropos for this time mm-hmm. in our culture.
Yeah, I think it was mostly the writing. You're right.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, can we start closing down with probably the thing that was the most controversial thing in specific regards to Christianity, and realize that
dinosaurs existed.
Dinosaurs existed?
Time of humans?
What?
Yeah, I don't know if that's... Is that a thing?
No.
I'm just kidding.
So Griffin and I tried to look this up right before the show, because I honestly don't know. I hope no one stops listening to the podcast, but at least where I'm at right now, I'm not a hardline, you know, 6-day creationist. And so I think they're, you know, let's not get into that right now. That's not the point. The point is that one of the first questions I was asked when I told some people that I did not care for this movie and they know I'm a Christian, they were like, oh, it's because...
The dinosaurs,
The asteroid didn't kill the dinosaurs. And they were all like, this is Pixar's agenda to prove that the world's, you know, millions and millions of years old. And so you couldn't like it because it's pushing that radical non-Christian age. I was like, I didn't even think about it.
I didn't think about that either.
Not once.
That is the discussion on the internet, though, is that...
Oh,
like,
I'm sure it is.
Is that, oh, you Christians don't like it because of this. And I'm like... No,
you hate science.
Well, okay, so I think we got that for two reasons, it sounds like we're kind of all on the same page. Like, not even a big deal.
Good joke though.
Well, yeah, it's pretty good. It's kind of a hilarious anecdote, but when you combine it with general cultural paranoia, I have very down culture tonight. I've read entirely too much social media the past week. At the time this is being recorded, and I'm pretty down on humanity. I understand the total depravity theology right now, and why we all need a savior pretty bad.
You Calvinist?
Yeah. So I just it's tough, but you know, especially with culture, like the two things that I saw talked about more, and maybe it's because the movie wasn't good enough to garner better conversation in general. But the two things were. That paranoia that said the short film before this was...
Oh my God, it was so good.
It was pretty good.
It was so pretty.
But it was a different religion. It was showing, you know, someone praying to a different God. And like, that's Pixar, you know, pushing their non-Christian agenda, followed by, you know...
Oh, I didn't see the short film because I went to a screening.
Oh, that's right. So it was...
It was a movie made by one of the Pixar animators, mm-hmm. like a short film made almost exclusively by him. Mm-hmm. And basically he grew up in a Indian home, and his father was Hindi. Basically, like, it shows this juxtaposition of this father kind of living in this old world where he, you know, every morning he gets up and he sits at this box and prays, and the child is watching superheroes on television, and dad comes over, turns on the TV, and like comes and sits the boy beside him and says, like, okay, you need to pray. And he picks up the little toy that he's like been playing with and like messes some stuff up.
So we spoil like everything except for the short film, because Alexis hasn't actually seen it.
Yeah, Alexis hasn't actually seen it. But that being said, I think that I think the Christian media that saw this, saw all of it together, you know, were just like whining because, well, they're just anti-Christian. I'm like, well, they're not Christian, so why should they, like, if they aren't claiming to be believers, like, why do we expect them to come to our aid and make a good movie about good Christian moral values? No. I'm like,
Yeah.
And I wonder about that, yeah. That's a whole discussion.
It shows that people are missing the point, because the point isn't that people need to learn how to pray in a Hindi tradition. The animator and the writer was talking about it. You know, it was about trying to bridge the gap between the faiths of different generations. Mm. And I think that the message or the thing that it showed us in the short film, which we don't want to spoil. If you haven't seen it, you should. But if you saw the movie, except outside of the way Alexis saw it, then you probably did.
Yeah.
gosh, Alexis. It was a really kind of poignant tale about what it looks like to have the faith of one generation, and how do you pass the faith of the father to the son. And I think that's actually something that Christianity can learn a lot from. Mm. And that's a conversation that I think Christianity should be having. You know, like, how do we pass Christianity down generationally? How do we, like what appeal does it have to the next generation? And ask those questions and then wrestle with it. But obviously, you know, not one for one, because it wasn't about Christianity, which is, like I said, but it's about a story that we have to wrestle with every day. So anyway, I'm glad that Extinction sorry, go ahead, Alexis.
Oh no, I just had a thought. I was just gonna preface that I'm not against, like, it kind of made it sound like I was like, oh, I'm so sensitive about things, and like when I watch movies, I'm not against things that obviously don't have the same beliefs as me, mm-hmm. of course, or I wouldn't like most things. But it was more just because it snuck.
Yep, you got a little bit of me going on.
I know. No, it's been
it's sneaky.
It snuck in some terminology, though, that was pretty specific to how Christians talk. And I think if it wasn't for that, it wouldn't have really, like, made something go ding. Of course, when I watch movies, I am, like, because I'm all about symbolism, story, symbolism, like, the deep stuff. That's what I'm there. And I am there analyzing from start to finish, what is this thing trying to say? Yeah. And a lot of people don't do that. I know, because some people are like, can't you just enjoy the movie and let it be entertaining? I'm like, that is how I enjoy the movie.
And then you turn to them and you grab them by their big fat head and you say, entertainment is not mindless.
I thought about
this
that.
This message has been brought to you by Real World Theology.
Yes!
But I think that if it wasn't for that, and I think that a lot of that, like we discussed, was just the writing being uneven, because it was like some minutes it would say things specifically, mm-hmm. other times it was too vague, it was just kind of all over the place. But I think it... the part about the science and the whole, like, oh, you know, the meteor didn't hit and Christians don't like this just because you're saying, you know, this is what would happen. And, like, that didn't even cross my mind. I actually thought, hey, that's kind of a cool concept, like a different, unique thing, you know. But I think it's just people want, I mean, Christians do enough damage to themselves just by saying stupid stuff a lot. But I think people also want to get that rise out of them. So they'll just say that. You know, like you said, too much social media this week for me, too.
Too much social
ugly.
Media.
Yeah.
It's ugly. Mm. Oh, God. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, you're okay.
Well, let's start to wrap this up, and hopefully this won't take another hour, because I hope we've hit most of it, but I definitely had some come on moments as I was sitting there being upset that I paid money to see this movie. Was that too harsh?
Jeez.
So, Alexis, were there any parts at all of this movie that you did not enjoy, or you made you say, come on?
Let's keep it to one, everybody.
I've got a list.
You can't have... we're going to be here all night, Mikey.
You know, not really. It was just, like, it wasn't anything like, oh, this is... To me, I wasn't, like, bored. It was more just, like, I just wasn't as enthralled as I normally am when I watch Pixar film. Yeah. I was just kind of like, meh, you know, the whole time. Hey, so I can't really think of anything specific. No.
Yeah, constant meh, I think, is in and of itself a good enough critique. Mm-hmm. Griffin,
I honestly, like, I think that there were so many constant. There was a constant, like, level of meh, like you're talking about, but also too, if there was a come on moment, it was the Barry scene where I just didn't understand why that needed to, like, what value that added to the story at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, other than maybe bonding them closer as friends, but even then I'm like,
you're like, this isn't half baked.
Yeah, like, of all the movies I've seen, like, people just don't end up actually being friends with the people that they make, like, that they smoke pot with. Like, it just doesn't, like, they're not actually friends with them. So yeah, I didn't feel like that was necessary, and it was very like, come on, like that was not necessary at all. It had nothing to do with anything, and it was just, like, it wasted like a solid 45 seconds of the film that was already just drawing on a little bit long anyways. Mm-hmm. So
that's kind of funny, because that wasn't my come on moment. That was my, what is happening right now?
Well, yeah, I literally felt like I was watching Across the Universe. I love that movie, but I was like, what is happening?
All right, so this movie has the worst dad in it that I've seen in a long time. Mm. And I, like, every time the dad or papa dinosaur opened his mouth, I was just like, come on, you're the worst dad. And I wrote down like six things that he did that were all like my come on moments. Basically every time he talked or did anything.
Okay.
Yeah,
'cause he was in the movie, what, like 6 minutes?
Yeah. So. I was like basically the entire time he was there.
Yeah.
But it was especially this one part when, like, 'cause it was completely unearned, and, he just did like the, you know, you were me and more. I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You didn't even have a relationship with your son. Anyway, so I was just like, that's so unearned. And it, like I said, the fact that it was supposed to help him do something, I was like, nope. And then the hallucination scene. And the fact that, like, just the general message of this film, like, I left and I felt bad because, you know, I was like, the question we asked for the very top of the discussion, where it was like, what did he do to earn his mark?
Yeah.
Like, what is Pixar trying to tell us that, like, a kid needs to do to earn his place in the world? And it was. So,
yeah,
Alexis, what did you like about the movie? What was your favorite moment or favorite thing?
The beautiful, beautiful animation.
Mm-hmm.
Although I do have to say, my favorite moment, and I'm sure this is a lot of people's favorite moment, and it has to do with what Griffin was talking about earlier with subtlety or not using a lot of words, was that scene where they were talking about their dead family or their, you know, the dead dad and. Mm. And drawing their family in the sand. I thought that was like the only really powerful moment of the film, where you felt like, hey, these characters actually have a connection and I actually kind of care about them in this moment. And I thought that was really well done. And I think, like, if you had condensed The Good Dinosaur to a Pixar short film, it would have been perfect. Mm. It could have been great.
I think I could buy that.
Yeah, for me, it was the same storyline, and it was like obviously a bit overt, but the scene at the end where like he pushes him back over and like kind of draws the circle around him, saying like, this is your family now, like, I can't be your family, like, because we can't talk and you're my dog and you're not a dog, you're a human, like, you have people who are like you, and I'm a dinosaur and I have people who are like me, and like, I don't want you to be owned by me or like have to be like,
yeah,
I'm not responsible for you and you're not responsible for me in this weird, like, because that was what the relationship was like, this really weird like dog, like man dog relationship, whereas that wasn't what he was.
But that's really weird though, because in the context that they're flipping the script, and it's actually one of the things that didn't sit right with me either, since they flipped the script, like, they didn't have to, they actually went beyond what the inverse would have been, like Spot and Arlo. I keep, you know, justified. Arlo Givens. They had, like, they became friends.
Yeah.
And that's basically like saying, well, because you're different, we can't be family. And that doesn't make, you know, especially as many people, like, have dogs and, like, the dog is their family, and if the dog passes away in a family, like, there's a big to-do.
Well, but I don't think that that's, like, I said that. I don't think I think the message was that, like,
you have your kind. You stay with them.
Well, no, like you are longing for a family, and these people clearly want to be your family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this man followed us another however long to find you, and to seek you out, and offered to you like a place in his home, and you should take that because he's like you, and you guys would. Like, I think it's
50-50 at best for me.
Okay.
Because it's, like, I totally get what you're saying, but every time that you have to describe it, you always have to end it with, because he's like you, which goes like flies in the face of almost everything Pixar has told us.
Yeah.
Almost every other Pixar movie is like, it doesn't matter if you're like me, like we can be family. I mean, that's Toy Story. That's all the Toy Story movies.
Buzz and Woody.
You know, that's like how people get along in The Incredibles. That's like Finding Nemo. That's your Monsters
Buzz,
Inc.
By the way.
My Buzz?
Yeah, your Buzz.
Oh, well, am I?
Yeah.
Are you sure I'm not Woody? I'm
pretty sure you're not Woody.
Oh, yeah, I guess I'm. Well, I mean, I don't know if I'd be Buzz either. I'd be like Mr. Potato Head.
Ooh, I like that.
Did anyone feel like the, you know, when the family comes and then there's the guy who starts looking for him? I feel like that happened too late. Like, that should have started happening early, like the search for the boy.
Yeah.
Because then they established that earlier on, because then you could actually feel like it was plausible. It just seemed like, oh, they threw that in so that he'd have somewhere to go in the end. Mm. I do think it's cool that, like, they do have their own two families. I don't think, yeah, they don't necessarily have to be separated or that they can't be friends. That seems kind of weird. But, you know, they do have a family that's wondering where they are and that's looking for them. And I think that that could have been a beautiful point, but they didn't do that either. It's like none of the things that could have been good, they did. They just like, you know, kind of just did it halfway. It was just not really,
Well, just so I can say that I did it, I would say that... my favorite thing was probably the visuals. Like, I actually wondered, especially at the very beginning of the film, if the landscapes and stuff were legitimately real. It got a little less so as the movie went on, and you could obviously tell with the contrast to the dinosaurs and the other characters. But some of the opening ones, like over the mountain range and stuff, I was like, no. Or like with the water. The water in this film was amazing.
I literally, for a second at the very beginning, I was like, this is a Terrence Malick film?
Yeah.
Is this Tree of Life?
Yeah. I started to think that too, but then I realized I was asleep, and I was like, it's got to be a Terrence Malick film.
I don't know. I don't approve.
I'm trolling Malick.
I don't approve.
I don't approve either.
I know. That's like, that was me trolling.
Wrap it up.
Wrap it up. Move on. Okay,
on
so
that note.
No. Okay,
gosh,
so,
Griffin just left.
So landscapes, great, amazing, best animation that I've ever seen. It's so realistic. Too bad it was on this movie. And then I remember leaving the theater with my wife, and there was only one time that I even smiled in this movie because I was so not entertained by this film.
Yeah,
and that was when, and probably because it was in Sam Elliott's voice, but he said, I texted my wife and was like, do you remember what that line was? Because we saw the movie about a week ago, and she was like, it's something about a crocodile biting your face off or something. I was like, yeah, because so the only funny thing that we thought was in the whole movie, we have already basically forgotten. There's some line that he throws in there after he tells the story, and he's like, if you ain't afraid of a crocodile biting your face off, and you ain't living, or something like that. And it was funny. That was it.
You can't remember it now.
And I can't even remember it. I even looked it up on Google, and apparently no one else thought it was that interesting.
No one else remembered it either.
Yeah, everyone else could get the... they just got the whole story where he talks about bathing them in my blood. I'm like, also great for kids to come watch. So, all right, Alexis, what do you have any final thoughts that you want to throw out there before we close?
No, I think we pretty much covered it. I think it was just I've had several disappointments this year, but it was it was one of the disappointments of the year. Not the worst disappointment, but meh.
Yeah. I completely understand. Griffin, final thoughts?
Sorry, I thought you were like wrapping this into like other disappointments in real life that you'd had this year.
You're like,
I've had several disappointments this year. I didn't get that raise. This movie.
And then with my lack of funds, I paid to see this film.
Yeah, I'm kind of along with Lexis. I feel like we covered quite a bit. I'll add it to the collection probably, maybe at some point. It'll probably be like, for me, for a long time, Ratatouille was not, like, I got given Cars 2, like, at Christmas one year. Because, I have this, like, going list of stuff that I just send to my, like, people when family asks, like, what do you want for Christmas?
Let someone else spend their
I just,
money
like,
on.
Have, here's an Amazon list of things that I'm probably going to buy at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. And it just took me a while to get Ratatouille. And it'll probably be like that, where it'll probably just sit in a list of just, like, eventually... when I have way too much extra money, I will
eventually
buy. Yeah, eventually. the eventuality of that is likely.
Basically certain.
Yeah, certain at some point in 2093.
Nope.
I won't be alive.
Do you have any rich uncles or anything?
One. Yeah, we don't know each other that well. Anyways, yeah, it was... It is definitely not. It will probably not go in the collection anytime soon, and that's a bummer to say because I can't. Even with Cars 2, I bought it. Got the T-shirt.
So, got the T-shirt.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So, I think I've made it abundantly clear that I did not like this movie. As much as I did not like this movie, it at least had things to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, so this is the difference between a movie like this and Minions. Because I can't talk poorly enough about Minions. Minions with basically zero plot and zero redeeming or even discussion-worthy topics. So if you've already seen this film with your kids, there are plenty of things to talk to. I would actually encourage you to please go talk to your children because they're probably, they need counseling.
They're probably trying to make their mark, and you probably should tell them they've made it. They have already succeeded.
Go hug them and say, I love you for who you are.
Yeah.
I
love that you read books wrong. Yeah, that is so great.
Dang, Mark, son, hurry up.
Yeah, like, just be like, hey, I know you've got challenges, and I would love to be there with you when we go through them, encouraging you and loving you through them, not scaring you into removing my love and acceptance from you in the way.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of stuff that I really had a problem with this film, but. People are still going to see it. People's kids are still seeing it. I personally have no intention of ever showing any children that I have this film. Mainly because I don't want to watch it again.
Mm.
I hope I never come across it again. But having seen it, I'm glad that we at least talked about it.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we kind of explored what was going on. Because like I said, this is the part two of the Minions conversation.
Yes,
part one was, why would you take them in the first place? Part two is, when you see a movie with your children that has messages that are questionable, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
And so I would, have conversations. Have conversations with your friends, because there's a lot of people that I know who have, me including, who have lots of baggage from parents, fathers, whatever. And seeing something like this is just going to bring those up. And because I noticed there were some people who completely missed it, and they come from different backgrounds than I do, and it's interesting to kind of connect on those levels and see where we differ. So if you saw it, talk about it, use it to your advantage. If you didn't and you're listening to this anyway, one, thanks for listening this long to a movie that we weren't super positive on, but know that you can have those conversations. And like I said, regardless, like other movies that we haven't liked, I still enjoy this conversation with you guys.
Yep, it's been fun.
So, if anyone wants to follow up with some of the things that you guys made, some of the points that you made, some of the problems that you have, or like I said, there are people out there who genuinely like this movie. If you like this, feel free in the comments to tell us why you liked it. Tweet at us, get a hold of us, however you can.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff we don't think about.
Yeah.
And so, just feel free to let us know, because, I think so often you hear somebody review something, you're like, well, I just don't agree with them, so I'm not going to talk to them about it. It's like, no, I want to talk to you if you like this movie. I want to know what was redeeming about this for you.
So, yeah. So, because there's two things to that. One is that we acknowledge that we're having, we definitely on this podcast have a conversational format intentionally.
Mm.
Griffin's not here being like, this is the exact thing that this movie was about, and it's about nothing else. We are saying that that's not the case. Much like any other art, there's lots of different ways to interpret it. The second thing is that it's being interpreted lots of different ways because we all bring our own personal experience to art. And there are things that people have seen in movies that I would have never seen because I didn't grow up in a certain way. I'm not from a certain area. I'm not from like a certain socioeconomic status. I had this many parents or whatever when I grew up. I didn't go through this tragedy. And so this film can be something like that. So let's have that conversation. And to do that, I wanted to make sure that my guests had a chance to tell you how to get a hold of them. So Alexis, how can people follow what you do and or get a hold of you and talk and further the conversation?
Okay. Well, I have a website blog, realcathedral.net. And on there, there'll be links to the Facebook page and the Twitter as well. And then I have my own Twitter, which is the Twitter handle Phoenician Rises. And you can follow me there as well. And I talk a lot about film and TV. So yeah, I'd be happy to hear from you.
Awesome. Griffin, how can people annoy you on the internet?
Yeah. you can follow me on Twitter. You might not enjoy it. I live tweeted the Game Awards this past week and lost like six people in the process. And I was content and happy about that. So understand going in.
You're not
in,
making your mark.
I am not making my mark in a legitimate way. Gosh. I find social media to be like absolutely ridiculous. And so I just like to make it a bit more ridiculous. And so, I had someone ask if I was having a stroke the other day because of what I was talking about. So, that's at Griffin_Kale. That's GRIFFIN _Kale.
Come follow me. And so come follow me.
Yeah. It's going to be a joyride.
Oh, you know exactly what's funny.
Yeah,
Griffin self-deprecation.
I also arrive on Facebook like once a day or so as I check out what the rest of the Real World Theology people are talking about in the
and
little
then you check
private
out.
Group, and then I peace out of there as well. I don't really post much to that. That being said, I am doing a new series that will be like seasonally in the sense that it'll like get eight episodes out or eight posts out, and then I'll take a break. The Real World site right now called Director's Cut, where I am reviewing and not really reviewing, just talking about all of one director's films and then going on to a new director. So the first few are going to be from Wes Anderson, and then after that I think it's going to be David Fincher.
Hey, don't commit to anything.
Don't commit to anything. It could
you're doing Wes Anderson.
It could
Anderson
be Terrence
right
Malick.
Oh, it'd be great. Then I'd be forced me to
Malick.
I have to go watch some Terrence Malick films.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that, and getting some design help from a really good friend of mine, Mike Van Patter, and so I'm really excited to be able to show his stuff off because he's doing so much awesome work on the design stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to bother him too.
Yeah. So that being said, you can also check me out there. I have a website. There's nothing on it right now. Hopefully next time I am on the show, I will be able to announce that like there is a lot on it because I have a lot like ready to go. So soon and very soon, probably in the new year, I've got hopes to take a week off and go to the mountains and finish up some stuff and then come back with a lot of stuff on the website. So I'm excited about that.
Nice.
Yeah. Real World Theology.
Awesome.
I'm there a lot.
Awesome.
Not a lot. I'm not there at all.
I mean, you're there enough.
You never
see
me there.
I love it.
I'm not on the show ever.
Oh, you...
I'm just kidding.
You're on the show now, Griffin.
I'm on the show now. It's okay. I'm kidding.
Live in the present.
I'm kidding. That being said, social media. I love it.
Well, I will make sure that you can find all their dumb social media handles on the site in the show notes. So go to realworldtheology.com to find that. Follow me at Fizzification on Twitter. Follow the show at RealWorldTheo. And despite Griffin's orneriness and Alexa's positivity, I am very, very grateful that both of them joined me. So please check them out. Please follow their links. Look at their work. Encourage them. Conversate with them. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Do it on iTunes or all the 100 other ways you can do it. Review the show. Oh, we would so appreciate that because we are very, very, very thankful for you, the listeners, because you take time out of your schedule to listen to us, to have this conversation, which is why we want you to, you take so much time to do it. Please leave us some feedback. Let's continue it. We want to know what you say. This, like I said, this isn't us telling you. This is us hopefully just sparking something. So interact with us. Thank you for your time. And until next episode, remember that story is powerful.
And entertainment is not mindless. Adieu.
Bye-bye.
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting.
Woo! My friend told me, she was like, I think the person playing guitar with this band is actually a bigger fan of Wes Anderson than you are.
No.
To which I responded, I said, question, is he working on an essay style post about every single movie that Wes Anderson is doing right now? And she said no, and I said, all right, then I win.
Wow, that sounded terrible. I just like it, it.
I was like trying so hard not to laugh.
It like came out, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, did I just
like
say it?
You know, you like listen to yourself in slow motion.
Like I heard it, like, and I'm like, I didn't just say that, right? Like that's what I was thinking about saying, but then I didn't say that, right? That's terrible because that's so.